Bhunaktu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahabiryam Karavahai. Ejasvinahadi tamastruma vigvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vyadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
It is imperative that a devotee avoids these 10 offenses in chanting the holy name of the Lord. He must never try to counteract his sins or accrue piety through ritualistic observances, because he is neither required nor even eligible to perform Karmakanda rituals. If perchance a devotee commits a nama parad, then with an anxious heart he should go on chanting continuously. Such continuous chanting will protect him from committing further offenses, as well as uproot his previous offenses. The scriptures clearly state that chanting alone can absolve all offenses and sinful reaction. Hence, chanting the holy name is the best shelter for everyone. Chanting removes the very desire to commit nama-parad and gradually elevates one to the highest spiritual level of Krishna prema. When one is freed from offenses, his attachment for the name increases. He will soon attain all perfection. Here, all perfection is synonymous to Krishna Prema. This is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's second instruction. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Antilila 2017-19. Because people vary in their desires, you have distributed various holy names by your mercy. Regardless of time or place, one who chants the holy name, even while eating or sleeping, attains all perfection. You have invested your full potency in such individual holy names. But I am so unfortunate, I have no attachment for chanting your holy names. Okay. So now this is commentary on... Wow. That specific verse. Okay. So... basically, he's pointing out is that the chanting is the only way for the devotee to purify himself. Neither is he obligated to follow any other process, neither is he actually qualified to follow any other process. So, therefore, one should only chant. And so that continuous chanting, that's what will remove everything. Notice in here, he said, doesn't say remove sin, right? Because that's generally how the material consciousness thinks, is that but you have to do a process to remove the sin. The sin doesn't go away. It's a sinful reaction. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. Only chanting can make that go away. Because the desire for sinful activity, that only can be taken care of by, by the chanting. Otherwise, the other may get rid of a reaction, but it doesn't get rid of the desire for it. So therefore, the chanting is the only method. You know, so in here, he refers to it as aparads. He doesn't refer to it as sins. Right? That makes sense? Because our viewpoint will be that. We will see it from that perspective. Aparads that are happening, not sins. Because the point is, something is considered sinful because it's not connected to Krishna. Right? Like we were discussing in the morning, you have your para and apara vidya. So that apara vidya can also be avidya. Right? If it's connected to para vidya, it's called apara vidya. If it's not connected to para vidya, then it's called avidya. So in the same way as that these piety and sin can either be connected to Krishna or not. If it's connected to Krishna, then you call it then piety means what is in connection with Krishna. Excuse me. So what is in connection with Krishna, that's piety. What's not in connection with Krishna, that's sin. That could mean it could be the very nice, pious activity. Because the activities of this world can go either way. They can be connected or not. So if you're simply looking from the mundane level, then the recommended activities in Shastra are pious. Those that are not recommended are impious. But if you're looking at it from the transcendental point of view of Krishna consciousness, then even those pious activities, if they're not connected to Krishna, those are impious. So the only real pious activity is what is in connection with Krishna. So that's why when they say it's like the cowherd boys, they had so much pious activities to be able to associate with Krishna. It doesn't mean that they were nice guys. It means so much devotional service they performed. And for that, then they're able to be Krishna's friend. Does that make sense? It's very important, this point, because so therefore we see on the platform of knowledge, it's connected. You know, Vedic knowledge is connected. Then it is aparavidya. It's not, it's avidya. On the platform of action, if it's connected, it's pious. If it's not connected, it's impious, even if it's a nice thing. Understand? That's the whole point. You know? A knife's a good thing. You use it, you could do so many nice things. You can cut your vegetables, they can use it in surgical operations, many things work. But if people can misuse them, and then they're bad. Does that make sense? So in the same way as these Vedic knowledge, Vedic activities, or any knowledge, any activity that's not connected to Krishna, is useless. Even no matter how nicely it's acclaimed and appreciated in this world, it still is useless. Does that make sense? You had an idea? Something? Yes.
Yes, Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada seems to be using pious activities in the case of the cowherd boys in a deliberate way. Why would he use that instead of devotional service, which seems to be confusing?
Because he's referring to the results of devotional service. Now, from performing so much devotional service, then they have gotten that sukriti by which they can be with Krishna. So you're taking a different angle. There's a devotional service is the activity. Here you're talking about the results. Right? So normally when you say devotional service, we're relating to it in the way of sambandha or abhideya. You know, abhideya means the action of sambandha, the position of devotional service. But here they're putting the result. Just like we could say that by the result of this, then one gets love of God or this or that. So in other words, the piety, because piety means you're getting a good result from something, you know, uplifting, progressive, like that. So, therefore then, devotional service is the one that actually gives piety. These other things don't actually give piety. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, do you get a first-class cell in the prison, or do you just get a regular, ordinary cell? So in the material world, the pious things, they call piety here, you just get a better cell. You know, that your ball and chain's made out of gold, you know. You know, so I'm sure if you went into a prison, you know, and the prisoners had to be, you know, they're locked up in that. If someone, what they were locked up with was gold, he'd feel himself very superior to the other ones that have iron bars or silver bars, you know. So amongst the criminals, then they would consider that that's pious. But the point is they're still in prison. Right? So actual piety is in connection with devotional service. It's also a matter of redefining the words and the concepts. So you know that that which is in connection to Krishna then gives results in connection with Krishna. While the mundane piety will give results in connection with the mundane. Is that okay?
Well, I mean, Prabhupada could have added an adjective like qualifying the...
He could have, but at the same time, it's an important concept, because devotees themselves are bewildered by the concept of piety. Not from that there. They just consider, because religion then is pious.
And by religion, you know, then you get artist or you get kama. So therefore, if something is pious and gets you artha and kama, in their mind, it must be religious. Right? You know, it's just like how you say? I think it was sometime back, one of our, you know, leading preachers was making comments about the distribution of prasad. There's food for life in that. Before, it was understood that it's Hare Krishna devotees distributing prasad. But because you want to do it in a proper way, either both to collect donations for it, but also so that you can get the local charities and institutions to give support, then you have to have it registered under something. So in the original, it was ISKCON Food for Life. No, ISKCON, no.
Hare Krishna Food for Life.
No, it's ISKCON Food Relief.
Oh, that's the old one.
Yeah, ISKCON Food Relief. Then Hare Krishna Food for Life, then Food for Life. But it was very obvious it was Hare Krishna devotees in that. But then in many places, then it was cloaked so much that no one even knew its devotees. And so then what was being pointed out is because it's cloaked so much, the people taking the food don't know its devotees. It doesn't know its prasad. Therefore, those who take that prasad don't get the benefit of prasad. They get a gyata sukriti. You know, it's like the ducks and stuff. You know, they'll take human birth. But it doesn't carry any devotional benefit.
Right.
Means you add enough of that up, then by association devotees, very quickly they'll become devotees. But you could, by having devotees out there distributing the prasad and know that it's devotees, then they get immediately devotional benefit. So he's making this point. So devotees themselves even become bewildered by the concept of pious. So in other words, if it's nice and it's good, you know, or it's new agey, you know, or it's all these different things, then they consider somehow or another that it's equal with chanting, which is the eighth offense. So even devotees are doing this on the subtle platform. That's what these point out. They'll go, yeah, I'm not doing a big karmic, I'm not doing an ashramedha yagya and think that's equal to holy name. No, but you're distributing food because you are convinced that this is a good, nice thing to do. Right? Because people ask us when you go out and says, okay, we want to do this. What are you doing? Right? Christians are distributing food, they're giving clothes. What are you doing? And then people who deal with this long enough start thinking, yes, we're doing nothing. What we're supposed to be giving is the holy name and knowledge. And then along with that, we have opportunity, then we'll give food. Prabhupada said, you know, if we're within a 10-mile radius of the temple, no one should go hungry. So that's a lot of prasad distribution. I mean, a lot. You know, so we go out, you know, 300 bums get some food. I know one temple, they distribute 50,000 plates of food per day. That's the last I heard of, maybe more now. 50,000 full meals, not just a little snack. Full meals.
Where's that?
It's in Bangalore. 50,000. Yeah, it means the government gives huge amounts of money for it. You know, but it's known the devotees are doing it. Like that. It's not, you know, like, so that kind of a thing is, so, you know, how much is going on? So they're sitting there and very happy that they piously fed a few, you know, winos and bums, you know, with 300 plates. But here it's like, you know, how many kids don't get proper food? How many this and that? You know, they rush off to school. I mean, so they, you know, all these different things. Schools can't figure out what to cook. You know, nobody wants to eat it. So there's unlimited opportunity there. So even they're doing that, they're not doing a great job. You know what I'm saying? What they could. But what inspires them is the pious element of it, not the devotional. You know? So those kind of things as devotees, that's why these are mentioned. Of course, is, you know, the karmis, it applies to the karmi. Which karmi is reading the 10 offenses? Right? That's the whole point. So we think, oh yeah, that's for them. Or it's for the Hindus. They're not reading this. We're reading this. So the whole idea is that we get so overwhelmed sometimes by our own conditioning that we think what is nice about our conditioning, the nice sides, that they're actually devotional. They may be pious, but it doesn't make them devotional. Until you connect it to Krishna, they're technically not pious even. They may be materially pious, But that's not our business. We're not trying to make a nice place for ourselves here in this world. We do devotional service. We get nice facilities. We see Swayambhuva Manu. He and his wife are enjoying very nicely the facilities that come from their proper activities. So it's a fine line to be able to balance all these things. So the point being is that there are things that devotees don't understand, like in Vairagya Vidya. What do you call it? Renunciation of? Renunciation through wisdom. Prabhupada originally wrote it in Bengali. And I think one of the chapters, all he talks about is karma yoga. He never even once says the word bhakti yoga. Because for us, piety is part of devotional service. Karma is part of devotional service. Knowledge is part of devotional service. Meditation or jhana is part of devotional service. So all these are our terms. But the non-devotees have used these terms, and they're also then supported by the Shastra because they give it its unique identity. Karmi is, you know, has his own identity. He's a Karmakandi Brahman. They will say, like we say, oh, the Smarta Brahmins, we think it's a derogatory term. No, that's what they call themselves. They call themselves Smartas. You know, the Mayavadis call themselves Mayavadis. The Sahajiyas call themselves Sahaji. You ask them, what's Sampadaya? Oh, Sahajiya Sampadaya. So, therefore, they've taken these things that are many times our names, and then use them in their own way, and then that becomes something unique that identifies them. So we also have to learn that these same terminologies have a different meaning in devotional service. You know, just like here, all perfection. So all perfection technically means prema. But if you're not talking about that, all perfection means liberation. Like that. Or for the karmi, all perfection will mean, you know, all material facility, going to the heavenly planets, getting, you know, name, fame, all these different kinds of things. So it's they're defined in all these levels. Does that make sense? Like that. Because otherwise, Prabhupada is pretty clear. But some of these things, they're subtleties. But devotees will, it'll just go by. They won't even catch that. They'll just catch that they've done something really nice to be around Krishna. Like that. Is that too much? Yeah, then can you move that? Is that okay?
Yeah, when people call us the Hare Krishnas or the Haris, like in England, isn't it about the same as people calling the Smartas? They mean it to be a slightly derogatory.
It can be, but they get the benefit.
We use it differently. We use the same expression. Yeah. We like it. Yeah, the Hare Krishnas are suits us.
Because they get benefit. You don't get benefit from chanting Smarta.
So that's why it suits us.
Yeah, so we don't care. Because that's one of the namavasas, even chanted derisively. They still get benefit, jokingly, derisively, like that. You know, Bhaktivinoda, of course, says the one who says Hare Krishna is the best man in the crowd. So you got a whole crowd of punks over there, and one goes, hey, Hare Krishna. You know, then he's the best one in the crowd, right? Even though he's got the most attitude and everything, that's why he said it, right? Like that. So, yes.
Mark, can you speak about constant chanting of the holy name?
Constant chanting.
I have.
If you want to know when you're brushing your teeth, what does that mean?
I'm sorry?
When you're brushing your teeth, you want to know what that means.
Well, it's
you've ruined exactly quite a few toothbrushes that way.
Well, see, in general, I don't see the devotees always chanting, right? I mean, including myself, especially myself, actually. But the idea is that. I've seen a couple of people chanting all the time, a lot in Hare Krishna everywhere, but they seem to, when we look, I mean, I don't want to be offensive, but a little fanatic, or maybe we don't.
Maybe look at it this way, is because those persons don't necessarily have a sophisticated social sense or social identity, they don't mind doing that while others do, so they refrain. Because of that simplicity, it makes them actually easier. While for someone more sophisticated, there's more things that are actually making forget Krishna. For the other person, simple, unsophisticated, like that. Because generally, you'll see a lot of times it's those persons. Now and again, you see someone who's not like that, but it's more rare. You know, you think, what is his name? I think Varshana Maharaj was like that. He could talk Chaitanya Charitamrita all day. You know? He was like that. Tatpur Maharaj is like that. I always said, but he had definitely no social sense or care like that. He once, I think it was his brahmachari, didn't brush his teeth for 3 years because he said, if your teeth are nice and white, then that attracts ladies. So he didn't brush his teeth. But I saw before, you hand him a mic, he could talk for 12 hours, no exaggeration, straight. It doesn't matter if anyone's there. I saw him once down at the one out-of-the-way train station. And just standing there at the place where people walk in and out. So everybody in the station has to go through that point. But they walk through and that quickly. And he's just talking there all day. Or you hand him a gong, then he used to be able to chant, you know, do kirtan for 12 hours. Like that. So you do have, he would be an example of someone with not much sophistication. Varshanamar is a little more sophisticated. So, but you do have that element. But the point is that's actually what we're supposed to be doing. But so what annoys you, the chanting or that kind of like, you know, overly ecstatic, you know, hey, bow, prabhu, you know, that kind of a thing. So that's a social thing that annoys you. So that means also then your chanting, the ruchi of your chanting is based on perfection rather than just it's the name. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a couple of things I constantly say sometimes from somebody would come to a class with his japa and then
but the point is you're listening to the holy name, that's also yeah, but that's the point is they want to chant in their mind. That's what the mind is for. So that's just being taking the unsophistication to more extremes. You know, so they had absolutely no social sense and don't notice it bothers anybody when you say, oh, I'm chanting. But the point is in the class, hearing and chanting go together. So if you're hearing Bhagavatam, you don't necessarily have to be chanting separately. If you are chanting, then you should be able to chant in the mind. I mean, I've seen people like that.
If I did approach somebody and says, but would you tell me your japa? Isn't it like we're going to do both at the same time? So we're supposed to chant 24 hours a day.
Yeah, but then the point is in your mind. The point is when you're in a public forum where everybody's listening to the class, then it's your duty to chant in your mind. Like that. People do it, so it's not, I've seen it. I've seen someone, they'll be chanting, you start talking to them, and they'll give answers and everything. And then when they start chanting again, they chant, you can tell that they've been chanting for the whole time. You know, they're going, Hare Krishna, oh yes, no, no problem, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare, you like this. Like that. You know, you know, this person Prabhupada said was on the Brahman platform, so it's like, you know, they're Brahman realized. So that is there. So my point is those kind of people have to chant quietly. You know, if they're cooking in the kitchen and they're chanting or everything's chanting, that's nice. But it also mentions here when sleeping. So that's also possible. Right. The cowherd boys, they go to sleep at night and just dream about Krishna all night. You know, and then they get up in the morning and now they can go see him. So these things are possible. Right. So this is that if he's free from all offenses, his attachment to the name increases. So then that asakti will be established. That will then mature very quickly into bhava, which then matures into prema. So then if you remove the offenses, then everything moves very, very quickly. So actually everything's held up by offenses. There's nothing else that stops us from developing love for Krishna, it's only offenses.
So if we don't chant constantly, then there's no offenses.
No, it's not necessarily that. It's a matter of when we are chanting, we should. That is there, but the main point is your mentality. If one is critical of the devotees, this and that, one won't be chanting. One will be busy trying to establish, you know, religious principles of how you see it should be, and arguing with everybody in the universe that might oppose your position. Right? So while that's going on, there is no chanting. So if that wasn't going on, you could be chanting. Does that make sense? So it means it'll come naturally. You know what I'm saying? The Kunti offers that prayer. May, you know, my mind, you know, flow to you like, you know, the river flowing to the sea, or like, you know, the young boys and girls think of each other. It's not a sadhana. You know, the girls don't get together and says, okay, now we got to think of some boys. You know, it's very spontaneous. You understand? So, therefore, if you remove the offenses, the natural spontaneous position to always be absorbed in Krishna. Is that okay? Yes, by chanting. That's the whole nice thing about it is the way to cure yourself of offensive chanting is chanting. You don't have another system. That's why he's saying there's no, he has no other, he's neither required, he says, nor eligible to do other things. Because the other things that the Vedas recommend, people basically can't do nowadays. You know, because the amount of focus, the amount of purity, the amount of lack of, you know, anger and bad qualities in heart. Like it says, to get the benefit from going on pilgrimage to the holy places, you have to be, your senses have to be controlled. You have to be free from anger, free from bodily conception, free, all the things that we would think, that's what I'll get from going there. Then, going there with that mentality, then it says, you get all those things. Right? So the whole point is they have such a high degree of it that their focus is so nice that then they get even greater degree. You know. But the holy name, you don't need all these other things, because neither do you have to do them and neither would we be able to do them. You know, devotees are still arguing over on, you know, how you say, you know, on this, do we have to fast till this time? You know. Explain, I think especially Govardhan Puja, or, you know, it's like, do we have to fast? Technically, you don't have to fast. Govardhan Puja is not a fast day. But most temples, because they can't cook a big feast and breakfast, there's no breakfast, so devotees think it's a fast day. You know, or Ramachandra's appearance day. When did Ramachandra appear? You know, so that fasting. So they take Ramachandra, Chandra, moon rise. It's nothing to do with it. He's Sun Dynasty. He appeared at noon. His name's Ramachandra. Right? So then noon rise is his noon is when he is it. But still, it's like, is it till that? Or no, but that's too fanatic. Let's do it till three. You know, this and that. So there's always arguments over these things. Does that make sense? Because the ritual aspect means more to us. But at the same time, as if that's broken, then they'll follow no rules. So it's excuse me. It's a difficult balance to get all these different things. Is that? But the base bottom line is you chant Hare Krishna, all your benefit will come from that. All these other activities are actually in support of chanting, right? We're under the modes of nature. Therefore, if we take a bath, therefore our chanting will go better. Technically, you don't have to take a bath to chant. But we're not avidhuts, so therefore, if we don't take a bath, we'll be in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, our chanting won't be good. That doesn't mean the ideal is to get to the point where you don't have to take a bath. Because in Krishna Lila, everyone takes a bath. But if on this plane, you're an avidhut, and you're absorbed in the Lila there, you're taking a bath over there, so no one cares if you don't take one here. Does that make sense? Yes.
When I first started chanting, I thought, oh, I wonder if I'm allowed to chant.
No, because you're okay, yeah. No, this means contaminated by the impersonal philosophy or other kinds of, you know, fruitive or, you know, karmic jnana. It doesn't mean the chanting that's been gotten in that. That is just, you know, we're either in the offensive stage, clearing stage, or pure stage. That's all. Is that okay? Yes.
Mark, is it better to increase your chanting, your individual japa, or to take part in or give them?
Whatever's available. You know, I mean, if you're into doing, you know, kirtan while you're on the bus or the tube going down to traveling around London, go for it, but you might find japas better there. You know what I'm saying? So if your temple and they're having kirtan, then get into the kirtan. If there's not a kirtan, then you get into japa. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a, it's not, there's no hard and fast rules. Main point is just be chanting. Is that okay? Yes.
Somebody is very much into kirtan, but they don't like so much japa.
Japa. Well, there's at least 216 rounds.
Like, why is that?
Why is that? Maybe more people there, more enthusiasm. You know, it's like you can stop chanting and get distracted by something, but everyone keeps singing, and you know, it's obvious if you get distracted, so it may make them more focused. Or maybe they like the melodic content, or you know, just doing something as a group, or but it doesn't matter as long as they chant the 16 rounds and then do as much kirtan as possible. Okay? It's whatever will make it work. If due to ignorance you're not chanting properly, then that has to be there. But the knowledge must be cultivated anyway. So one must study. So one must see and find the balance. If one's becoming proud of one's knowledge, then that's not so beneficial. So then better to either get rid of the pride or put a little more time into chanting. Does that make sense? But it's just a matter of what is there, you know? What is your preference, your taste? Because you have Shravanam, you have Kirtanam, you have nine processes. So if you like Shravanam more, you do that more. You like Kirtanam more. Because if you do Shravanam enough, eventually at some point it's got to come out as Kirtanam. Is that okay?
Still about chanting. We have so many statements, and we make in our preaching work, we mentioned the glories of the Holy Name quite a bit. Its power and how wonderful it is, the solution for everything, and how sweet it is. We go on and on. And this one man I used to know, he went to the morning program a few times, and because he was intrigued that we talk it up so much, that there's got to be something there he wanted to find out for himself, which is, you know, a very sincere step. Which few people make. And I spoke to him afterwards, and he admitted to being disappointed with the fact that as much as we praise the Holy Name, there is the statement that we are so unfortunate we have no attraction for it. So why? And also, I seem to see all these devotees at your japa time, either talking with each other, falling asleep, or spacing out, looking around.
But you have to take it that those are the sincere ones. The other ones are doing email. You don't see them.
Yeah, so even more, you're making my point, Maharaj. I had some difficulty to actually satisfy the man, because I thought he had a fairly, you know, points which are even still doubts in my mind, in fact. And the last thing is... I said, okay, well, you know, there's all kinds of calibers of devotees in the temple, and many are beginners. And then he pointed out to me still that, but he also observed that some of the senior devotees who have been around chanting for 10, 20 years, they're also falling asleep and talking with each other.
But the point is it's spiritual life doesn't mean that you're still not the same person you were. It means you still are a person. This idea is just like, if you look at any of the Karmi's ideas of, what do you call it, a spiritual person, you know, like these famous old movies, classics, you know, the Ten Commandments, or what was it, the other one, there was one. Yeah, there's ones like that. You know, big actors, I think in those, every actor in Hollywood is part of it and everything. So they have Moses there. So Moses looks pretty, you know, bedraggled. I mean, he looks pretty good as an Egyptian when he becomes, you know, one of the local wallahs. Then he looks a bit, you know, a bit bedraggled. But then when he goes to Sinai and he comes back, then he's got this, you know, hairdo, you know, stuff. Even Elvis would have been jealous, you know, just, you know, brushed back, and it's about this high, you know, and you know, he's got that look, you know, everything's like that. So basically, most people think unless you look like that, it's not spiritual. You have that element. The point is that it's a sadhana, and it's a matter of, it's the only way to do it. It's just like cooking is the only way you eat, but how many people are good at it? But there are people that are good at it, and everybody could become good at it, right? Right? Isn't that the saying? Everybody could cook, right? So that's the whole idea, is that it's there, it's a voluntary thing. Each individual is going to take it, and according to their own ability, practice it. But the point is the name is that great, but you have to appreciate that. So we talk about what it is, but my personal conviction may not be in application, may not. My knowledge may be great, but then knowledge has to be applied. You know, just like let's say you go down, they pay a lot of money at these universities for lecturers to speak on economics. And they can talk all day. And they can tell you how everything's going, why all the problems in the world, everything. But if you told that man, okay, here is $10,000 or $100,000, go out and make some money, he wouldn't be able to make any money at all. So that means is knowledge is the first step, shravanam, you hear. The next step is manana, where you apply it. So when you apply it, that's where all the weaknesses and all the different things that are there in one's own heart then come up. That's why then you continue studying, you continue associating, so that as they come up, you can start to deal with them one by one. So that's the element of nanarta nivritti, is that you're dealing with it, removing those things and getting, because once that's dealt with, and then your ability to apply it is as good as your understanding, right? Then that comes to realization. Then what the person is looking for, he'll see. So on these things, there's no time limit. So just like someone could be chanting for 20, 30 years and not get so there, someone could be chanting for some days and be very advanced. So it goes both ways. So is that okay? Yeah? Keep saying, oh, okay.
I think that sometimes the devotees, they have their like material conceptions on the different aspects of the Lord, like such as the holy name and his form and qualities, and that's why they cannot really relish what it really is. I have seen that just that one has to only like kind of like focus and accept what the Lord is, and then maybe one can relish what it really is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's, okay. You could hear that? There was a comment is that many times is that devotees hear all these things, but they don't necessarily exactly take it that that's the way it is. So if we just accept Krishna and his name for what he is and how it is explained, then it makes it a lot easier to relate. You know, because Krishna is a person, and so he's just trying to reawaken in us that relationship with him. He doesn't have to reawaken the relationship. That in his mind is still there, just like the father has a son. The son somehow or another has become wayward, gone away, and has forgotten about his home and family. But the father remembers the son, so he makes endeavors to find him and, you know, everything like that. So it's just a matter of how those things are. Krishna is like that. He is a person, and he's you know, trying to reestablish these relationships. The point is, though, is the problem in it is us. So you don't have to talk about that Krishna is doing. You have to talk about that what we have to do. Because Krishna is already doing what he's supposed to do. Right? Does that make sense? Is that? Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, could you say something about the connection between book distribution and chanting?
Between book distribution and chanting. What kind of connection are you looking for?
Like, does book distribution purify you in the same way as chanting? If you're distributing books, do you still need to chant extra, or is it?
No, it seems that you have your required minimum that you chant. That's part of your sadhana, or part of your lifestyle. Book distribution is your particular service that you're doing, because someone could be doing book distribution or cooking or some other management or anything. But of all those, then book distribution is what you consider, you know, basically your best of those kind of activities. So then that itself, then, by doing book distribution, you are distributing that knowledge by which people will become chanting. So that's why they're so close. But if you're finding that in the book distribution, because it's purifying, that so many things come up in the heart, either you stick at it and it will eventually become nice, or you try increasing your sadhana, you know, to give support to that. In other words, they nourish each other. Right? Your chant means we're chanting to be able to engage in Krishna's service, but that service is also based on that taste for the holy name. You know what I'm saying? It means the residents of Braja, they're always absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna, but they're also serving all day. Right? They're not just sitting around and doing, you know, nirjan bhajan. They're all engaged in service all day, but they're all chanting all day. So there, because they're chanting all day, they don't have to have japa, which is a regulated amount to make sure that minimum you don't chant any less than that. Does that make sense? Because they're chanting all day. You know, it's like you have that story of, I think, I can't remember who went with Krishna. I think they went up to Arjuna or something. They were listening and even his hair was chanting or something. You know, Garuda flaps his wings, the Samaveda comes out. You know, so the, you know, these devotees are chanting. That's all they do is chant. But all they're all, what you see is service. Does that make sense? So they both go together. So if in your book distribution, then you find that that needs more support, then increase your sadhana. Does that make sense? You know, at the same time, it's the more you're absorbed in the book distribution, your sadhana go better. That they'll nourish each other. Something else? You had something? No? You keep half raising your hand and then putting it down because I called someone else. It's okay. Okay. And a commentary. Now this would be specifically, okay, that was giving all background, so this would be like direct. O Lord, out of your causeless mercy, you have manifested innumerable names and have empowered these names with all your potencies. You have not imposed rigid rules for chanting and remembering your names. You have not laid down conditions barring anyone to chant or remember your name even during eating, reclining, sleeping, etc. But I am so wretched that I am not attracted to your names. So here the word bahu, or many, many indicates the two types of the Lord's names, principal and secondary. Principal names include Krishna, Radha, Raman, Gopi Jana Balabha, etc., that convey the loving conjugal mood of the Lord, and Rama, Vasudev, Narasimha convey the awe-inspiring opulent mood. Brahman, Paramatma are the secondary names. So in other words, you have those that deal with the conjugal, and then those that deal with, here he said, the awe and reverence, like that. So, but the point is that they're in relationship of Krishna with his devotees. Right? Does that make sense? That's what makes it important. So here is that Brahma, Vasudeva, Narasimha. Then it's also in relation to the devotees, but it's more on reverence. Does that make sense? Then you have the secondary names. Brahman, Paramatma, etc. are secondary names. They are incomplete, separated, and partial names. The Lord's principal names are non-different from the Lord and possess all his energies. The secondary names are also impregnated with his pastime potencies, but in partial degrees only. Because it's only partially he's doing that. In Brahman, he's partially, those pastimes there, is partially there. It means that those are all reflected from his inherent qualities in the performing his pastimes with his pure devotees. So those that potency, that is what is then we're dealing with in the universal form that then we have base our interactions on. Right? So this has some element of pastimes to it, but it's not Paramatma. He's interacting with the living entity. He's arranging everything, but it's only partial. Because the main point is these others are in connection with us, are in connection with the material world. Right? While the others are in connection with the Lord and his devotee. Does that make sense? Because Brahman or Paramatma are concepts of a conditioned soul. They exist, but they exist because there is the mundane consciousness of the spirit soul. Does that make sense? Right. So then the idea is that one must therefore adjust one's mentality to come to the transcendental platform, which means on the Bhagavan platform. Then it's there, it means those are all names that are in connection with Krishna and his interaction with those devotees. Does that make sense? Yes.
And the names of the other God, the conception of God in other religions, are they like secondary? Like
depends upon what they are. Allah, the great one, so it has to be secondary. What's the next one? The second name is, I think, is Rahman. Like that. That would be more primary, but they wouldn't understand. They would just understand enjoyer, but they don't know enjoyer of what. So therefore, it would be a secondary name. Like that. But the point is it has some potency, and they'll get some benefit. So the point is they should be absorbed in chanting whatever is their names. You know, they do that. Then they'll get benefit. Is that not something? Yes.
What about the word, the name of Krishna in the form of Jagannath? Is this primary or secondary?
It would be primary.
Because Jagan means the world and not the Lord of the world.
But it's in relationship to Jagannath. So when you say Jagannath, you'll think of Jagannath because it's
Krishna.
A very specific form.
Yeah, Krishna.
Means if it's, let's say you're a Hindu and so Jagannath means the Lord of the universe, then it would be secondary. Then it's like Paramatma or, you know, Super Soul or, like that. But for us, when we say Jagannath, then we think of Lord Jagannath. So then it's, you know, him and that pastimes of, you know, hearing about Rajalila and that ecstasy and all those different things like that. Does that make sense? So we'll answer. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Pranandi. Thank you.